Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Okay, hour three is here. The number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I have a message here from Anonymous listening in Minneapolis regarding an unfaithful parent. Question is, I recently found out that one of my parents is having an affair, and I'm worried for his or her soul. How can I tackle this in addition to prayer? I should mention that my parents are in their 70s. Thanks in advance for your advice. This is a tricky one, obviously. And as the adult child, you have standing to bring this up. I mean, this is family. This is your parents. So I think this falls squarely into the category of the precept of the church to admonish the sinner. But how you go about it, of course, is going to be probably the essence of everything. So one way to handle it, I don't think I can presume to give advice on exactly how to go about it, but number one, I think you do have an obligation to try to remonstrate with this parent of yours. You could do it in person. If you're physically near the person, you could write an email or a handwritten note, but that runs the risk of it falling into the hands of somebody other than the one to whom you intend it. You could call. But if it were me and I were you, I would point out, listen, you're in your 70s. I mean, God willing, you have a longer life, and I hope you have a long, long life, but all other things being equal, the life expectancy for the average American adult is about 78 years old, and you're getting close to that, which means you're going to die soon. Soon being a relative term, of course. And if you die doing this, unrepentant, carrying on, gallivanting, stepping out, cheating on your wife or your husband, my mother or my father, if you die in that state, and you could have a stroke, have a heart attack, there are plenty of ways that life can end suddenly without warning and without a chance for you to go to confession, you are going to go to hell forever. And I love you, and I don't want that to happen to you. Of all people, my own parent, who raised me to know what was right and wrong and raised me to do the right thing, and now you are backsliding into this sin, I can't let you go to your grave without standing up and saying, I love you and I want you to be happy and you've got to stop doing this. And that's just one reason. The main reason, of course, you don't want to go to hell, but you're offending God. You're offending your spouse. You're giving scandal. You're leading the other person that you're carrying on with to hell. I would say something like that. And, you may get rebuked or you may get the cold shoulder or you may, who knows what the response will be, but wouldn't it be better if at the end of your life and you look back and you say, I'm glad I said something, I'm glad I tried, versus being on your deathbed and saying, I wish I had said something. I wish I had tried. If only I had said something, maybe things would be different. So you've got really nothing to lose, honestly. And maybe if you're concerned, well, I don't want dad or mom to get mad at me and write me out of the will. That's a very small price to pay for somebody's eternal salvation. And maybe you're the one that the Lord wants to use. So lovingly, gently, but firmly and clearly, if I were you, I would raise this issue. Now, I can't let this question go by without adding one other thing. And I'm known for this, but here goes. There's a book. It was written, I think it was in 1884, by Father F.X. Schuppe, S-C-H-O-U-P-P-E. It's called The Dogma of Hell. And it's a fairly small book, little paperback, garish red cover, has a picture of the devil on it. And it's all about what did Jesus say about hell, the reality of hell, what will send you to hell, This, by the way, is one of those things. And from the lives of the saints and true stories of people from hell who were permitted by God to manifest and warn other people, if I were you, and if this conversation maybe doesn't go the way you hope it will, get a copy of that book and give it to this parent of yours. And you won't even have to say, but he or she will understand what you're really saying is, listen, you're on your way to hell. So this book will show you what it's going to be like when you get there. And then stand back and see if God is going to work in that person's heart. If you're at that point, and this is the late stage, and this parent is doing all these things, what have you got to lose? You've got everything to gain and nothing to lose. So that would be the icing on the cake, if you ask me, would be to give a copy of that book. Well, why are you giving me a book on hell? Well, because that's where you're headed. I hate to say it, but that's why. Travel guide. So you'll know what to expect when you get there. And that will have, if your parent is normal, this is like an armor-piercing round, which will get through a lot of the self-justification and all the game-playing and all that other stuff. This book has a habit of being an armor-piercing round. It will go right through all that stuff and hit home, and that's what you want, right? Because you're hoping that God's grace will work a conversion in that parent's heart. So I'll leave it at that, but that would be my advice. Let's go to Ted now in Hawthorne, California. Hello, Ted. Welcome.
Patrick?
Hello, Ted. Yes.
Good morning. My question is, I'm a Catholic. I married a Protestant, and I thought I read it in the Bible somewhere, but I can't find it now. I thought that when a couple marries, the children normally take the religion of the father. Mm-hmm. And that's not the case here. She's taking them to Protestant church just because that's where she was going before we met. And, so I went and checked it out. I asked the priest, can I go to this Protestant church just to see? She asked me to come and see. I played along. But I asked the priest first, and he said, Ted, the only thing that I can tell you, if you go, you're going to be really, really confused. And so I didn't really get what he meant at the time, but after attending a few times, I'm totally confused. But now is the question, I want my kids to be, have all the sacraments like I did. I think they're just completely missing out going to this Protestant church.
How old are the kids? Church.
One's about to be 7, 9, and 10.
Okay. So it's a little late in the game, but it's not too late. A couple of things I would mention. Number one, well, let me ask you this. When you got married, did you get married in the Catholic Church or no?
No.
Okay. And
that was, not to interrupt, but mm-hmm. there was a caller earlier that brought up being married on the beach and stuff, and that was totally what I did, and I had been receiving communion because I'd made a good confession, at least I thought, but now since to that call, I know I'm not even supposed to be receiving communion. So that was kind of what prompted the call. Mm-hmm.
That's a separate issue, and that's an important thing you brought up. So as far as that part is concerned, you belong in the Catholic Church, Ted, and the door is open to you. You can resume a happy, what I want to say is with a clear conscience, you can resume a happy sacramental life in the Catholic Church. You would need to make a good confession and bring up the fact that you got married outside the church and you realize that you now realize that this is a problem. Maybe you didn't understand it before. So now that you understand it, you're bringing it to confession. Now, if you and your wife live as brother and sister and you go to confession, then you're free to receive Holy Communion in good conscience. If you keep living as husbands and wives live, doing what husbands and wives tend to do, then even if you went to confession and you had no intention of stopping that activity, then you should not go to Holy Communion because you're not objectively in the state to receive Holy Communion. So a lot of that's going to depend upon the relationship you have with your wife and if she agrees with you that you want to do this, and maybe she does, maybe she doesn't. So that's a kind of a side issue, but that would be my advice on that. If you can live as brother and sister make another good confession, and then you can receive communion. In the meantime, though, I do support you, and I agree with you, that you should be raising your children Catholic. Now, the reason, Ted, that I asked you if you were married in the Catholic Church is because in the Catholic wedding ceremony, both you and your wife, in this case, would promise God and the Church and each other that you would raise any children that God blesses you with in the Catholic faith. It's an explicit promise that's made. But since you didn't get married in the Catholic Church, neither of you made that promise. But the moral force of it is still incumbent upon you as the head. You know, you're the head of your wife, you're the head of the family, as it says in Ephesians 5. So you have, as the head of the family, not just the right, but also the obligation to raise your children in the Catholic faith, to make sure that they're baptized and receive their other sacraments. I realize that this can be really problematic given the circumstances as they are, but I would press forward in love, in peace with your wife, love her, be patient and kind and all those things, but at the same time, see to the spiritual welfare of your children. And that would include, if you ask me, Ted, not allowing them to go to that other church, because just like you, they are going to be more and more confused. And the longer you wait, the more difficult it will be for them. You know, the more steeped they are in that world, in those concepts and things, the more difficult it will be for them to transition into the fullness of the truth in the Catholic faith. So the earlier you can do this, the better, if you ask me.
So you said, so it doesn't specifically say in the Bible, you said Ephesians 5. Other than that, it doesn't say in there that the children should be raised Catholic, or is there my obligation for the children to be raised Catholic?
Okay, that's a good question. So think about Proverbs 22:6. And you should write that down. Proverbs 22:6, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. So what is the way that a child should go? Well, it's the way that Jesus said, go into the whole world, make disciples of all nations, baptize them, teach them to observe all that I have commanded you. So he's giving the apostles in Matthew 28:19 and 20 a blueprint for what he desires for all people, including your children. And that is to enter into the church that he established through the doorway of baptism. I don't know if any of your kids are baptized, but that's the first of the sacraments that they should receive. And they have a right to receive. This is their birthright, their patrimony, and they should not be deprived of it. They have a right to receive all these gifts that Jesus wants for them. And so you, Ted, you're the superintendent of that process. And so you do have an obligation before God to provide your children with the opportunity to receive all these good things. So does the Bible say that you must raise your child Catholic? No. The Bible also says that you shouldn't incinerate cities with nuclear weapons. It doesn't have to say that specifically. But here we have in the Bible that you should train up a child in the way he should go. And what is the way he should go? Well, the way that Jesus said, which is to enter into the church that he established. So that's the way I would approach it, Ted, personally.
Okay. Yeah, I like it. And that, so that was Proverbs 26, and then also in Matthew 26 and 28.
Proverbs 22, verse 6. Now, that's just one passage. I mean, there are any number of other passages. So, like, for example, Jesus says, why do you say to me, Lord, Lord, but do not do what I command you? Well, what does he command us? What he says, follow me. Pick up your cross and follow me. Or he says in Luke 10:16 to the apostles, he who listens to you listens to me. He who rejects you rejects me. Speaking there to the magisterium of the church. So we're told there that Jesus is saying, if you ignore the church, if you ignore the apostolic teaching authority that I have established, you're really ignoring me. So it's an unbiblical notion. I'm not suggesting that you hold this notion, Ted, but many do, that you can presume to listen to Jesus, if that were possible, but ignore his church. If you ignore the church, you're ignoring him, mm-hmm. You know. So he established the church in a way similar to how God commanded Noah to build the ark. And that's to save people in a flood. And if you want to be saved, you get on that ark. If you choose to go body surfing, good luck. And I don't mean you. I'm just saying rhetorically.
No, I understand.
And that's what the church is there for. It's the ark of salvation. And the Lord wants everybody on that ark, including your kids.
Good stuff. I have ammunition now, and not to use it in a way that's going to be detrimental to anybody, but that's a good analogy. I really appreciate it. I learned so much from you and your show.
You're welcome, Ted.
Yeah, God bless you and your whole ministry.
Thank you. Well, I wish you well, and I will pray for you and for your wife and for your children that this can be a peaceful and happy and easy transition. It may not be, but at least you know the direction to go in. Not because I said it. What does it matter what I say? It's what Jesus said. That's all that really matters. So follow him, chin up, and move forward in faith. Thanks, Ted. I'll be right back. This hour is sponsored by Notre Dame Federal Credit Union, where you can boost your savings with their 14-month share certificate, earning a 4.14% annual percentage yield. Info at relevantradio.com/certificate.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Let's review that phone number, shall we? 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. We have one line open, so call now. Let's go to Anna in Seattle. Good morning, Anna.
Good morning. My situation had to do with, I had a bad marriage a long time ago, and I got divorced from my husband, and I know now from the Holy Spirit that the reason I was seeking, I left the church, the Catholic Church, was to get approval from that divorce. I had good reasons to leave my husband from the Bible, but I never felt right about it. And now, 20 years later, came back to the church, and I am learning so much about the Catholic Church, things that I never knew before. And I'm hungry for serving the Lord. I went to confession. In the meantime, during this time, my husband died of cancer, and I felt so guilty. I still hurt.
Your first husband or the second husband?
My first husband.
Okay.
Died of cancer. And then I remarried outside the Catholic Church. But then I found out what you just mentioned with the other callers, that I needed to have that marriage blessed in the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. I did that. But now my big burden is that I took my two kids out of the Catholic Church. They both married in the Protestant church. And one of them, my daughter, does not even attend church anymore. My son still attends the Protestant church, married a Protestant girl. And they're good kids, but the consequences and the legacy that I left is just very painful right now.
So you're feeling the pain of, I don't mean to put words in your mouth, Anna, but are you feeling the pain of guilt that because of your decision to leave the church, now they're no longer Catholic?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's start with the good news. The good news is that there is no sin you can commit that is too big for God's grace to forgive. So as far as God forgiving you is concerned, just know that if you're truly sorry, and I can hear in your voice the emotion, I have no reason to think that you're not extremely sorry for the decisions that you made that resulted in these things, and you've asked for forgiveness, and I'm assuming you've gone to confession, right? You've gone to confession for these things?
I have. The one that you brought up today was I did go to communion without the knowledge that I was married outside the church, but I need to confess that.
Okay. So, and this is not intended to cause agitation or anything, but as you know, Jesus says, you know, he is the good shepherd, and the good shepherd goes in search of that lost sheep. The 99 sheep who didn't wander away are safe in the pasture, and the one sheep who did wander away, he goes in search of that sheep and finds that sheep and brings the sheep back, and that's what he's doing with you. So
yeah.
He loves you, and he wants you to be happy, and he wants you to be at peace. So the thing that I would recommend is, as you look back on your confession, if there's something that you really didn't know was a sin, it just no one ever told you or you never realized that, but you know it now, when you go to confession the next time, just bring that up and just say, I didn't know that during this interim time that I shouldn't have been going to communion, and I did, and I probably went this many times, or I don't remember how many times. Just bring it up, honestly, and then you know that you've left it there at the foot of the cross and that Jesus has forgiven you for this. Okay?
Yeah.
That's the first thing. Now, what about your kids? So you have no idea what it would take for them to become Catholic or to come back to the Catholic Church. Only God really knows what that is involved. So what I would suggest there is do the best you can in telling your children in a gentle, loving, motherly way that you would love them to come into the Catholic Church and talk about the sacraments and the power of Jesus in the church. And that may help. Maybe it won't help. But in the meantime, be praying for them. Pray the rosary every day, you know, as you probably already are. Pray for them, show them good example, give them encouragement when you can, but really lean upon God, because remember that he loves these children even more than you do, and he wants them to be happy and to be saved even more than you do. So you can rely upon that, and just trust in him, and ask him every day. Remember, Jesus tells the story of the persistent widow who's badgering this unjust judge. So he's a corrupt judge. He's a bad guy. And this widow wants him to rule in her favor on some legal case. So Jesus says, you know, after a while, it's just, all right already. Okay, get off my back, lady. I'll give you the judgment you want. That's what happens. And so this is Jesus' way of saying, if even an unjust judge, if even a sinful, corrupt man like him, if even he will say, all right, I'll give you what you want because you're badgering me, he's saying, how much more so will your Father in heaven who loves you give you these things that you want? So that's the Lord's way of reminding you, just be persistent in prayer. Even when it seems like God isn't listening and nothing is happening and this is all just going nowhere, stay faithful and keep praying for your children.
Yes, and okay. I'm hopeful because my two grandkids, actually my daughter does not go to church, but one priest agreed to baptize them. I don't know if that was right or wrong, because from another priest, he said he would not baptize my grandkids if my daughter was not practicing, but this one priest agreed, and I told them I would take them to church, and I would. So things are. I know the Lord is working. Things are happening.
That's good. That's good. And often, you know, what happens is, at least in my own experience, Anna, for what it's worth, often when it seems like nothing is happening, in reality, there are things that are happening behind the scenes that I can't see. So this is an opportunity for you to trust the Lord more intensely. Rely upon him. You know, one of the things I've figured out later in life, and I guess I'm still figuring it out, is how much I can't control. And it's humbling for you and for me to realize that you, in many ways, are not in control, and you can't fix things, and you can't change things that you know that you could fix for the better if only you could, but you can't. So it causes you to have to rely all the more upon God, and that's how it should be. Well, hang in there, Anna. Chin up. And I hope that this conversation was helpful to you. Thank you. Let's go now to Chuck in Raleigh. Good morning, Chuck. Welcome.
Good morning, Patrick, and the blessings of the day to you, sir.
Thank you. And to you as well.
Thank you. When I was in Vietnam in 67 and 68, Father John Wishard, at one mass, gave us general absolution because of what we were doing. Mm-hmm. No confession per se, but general absolution from everything we had done back in our lives. Subsequent to that, there were some things that happened that were difficult. Mm-hmm. And before I was 18 years old, went in the Marine Corps, I did some things that I still carry in my heart, and I'm not sure they were forgiven by that general absolution. And I feel this burning need to go to confession. And I know you say it's not necessary, but there was no confession. It was a general absolution. It was mm-hmm. truly moving and dutiful. But I still carry these things in my heart. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Chuck, did you go to confession? No, don't be sorry. This is good. This is important. Did you go to confession at any point after that point in Vietnam? Have you been going to confession?
No. I carried those things when I got married. After I came back from Vietnam the second time, we went to confession, but that never occurred in my mind, and it's going through all these decades.
Yeah. There is a solution.
That comes.
Mm-hmm. You're feeling the pangs of your conscience and remembering things that happened that cause you pain now, right?
Every day.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Lord is the divine physician, and He wants to heal you emotionally, spiritually, all of those things. And here's what I would recommend, Chuck. Go to confession, and if you haven't gone to confession since then, tell the priest ahead of time, and maybe if you wanted to make an appointment, just let him know, I need to go to confession. It's been a long time. Can I make an appointment so I'm not holding up the line? And he'll understand. And you don't have to be face-to-face if you don't want to. You can go into the confessional if you prefer anonymity. You have that right. And then just start from the beginning. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It has been X number of years since my last confession. The last good confession where you didn't hold anything back and you were honest. And then say, since that confession, here are my sins. And of course, you're going to want to talk about the things that are causing you a lot of pain. But in your examination of conscience ahead of time, just go through the examination of conscience and carefully consider, were there any things that you did that are seriously sinful, whatever it may have been, pride, theft, sexual sins, missing Mass on Sunday, contraception, whatever it may have been, just be thorough, get a complete inventory, but include these particular things. And then once you have confessed all of it and you've held nothing back, then here's what happens, Chuck. Not only are you completely forgiven when the priest grants you absolution, you'll know that you've been forgiven by God, and you can leave all of those things at the foot of the cross, and they're no longer going to be sins attached to you. But even then, when you feel the feelings of remorse and regret and pain and shame or whatever those feelings are that you feel, now you're in the healing process. So now, after you've done that, you can heal. And this is where the grace of the sacrament can begin to heal those emotions and those memories. And then by sticking close to Jesus, receiving Holy Communion in the state of grace, and an active prayer life, call upon your guardian angel many times a day and ask him to help purify your memory. And he will do that. Help him to purify those things in your memory that haunt you. And he will help you, because that's part of what they do for us, is they help to defrag our mental hard drives. So those are all things that you could do even today to start that healing process.
Can I ask you one other question?
Sure, sure.
As part of this stage of my life and going through the bucket list, my wife and I of 55 years have talked about going to Fatima and Lourdes this coming year. And the more research I do on it, our personal belief to go to the Blessed Virgin's places is true. And but when I do the research on going there, it looks like they've turned it into Disneyland. Is it still as valued, or is it really worth it to go there anymore?
Well, it depends on which place you have in mind. So if you're talking about Lourdes, I would say certainly. Fatima, certainly. Any Marian shrine, the value comes from your intention and your desire to be close to Our Lady and receive graces from God. That's what really matters. Now, to the extent that it becomes a circus outside with the shops and the things that they're selling, the tchotchke stuff, I would just ignore that because, you know, that doesn't lessen the spiritual benefit that you could receive from making a pilgrimage. It's a distraction, but it won't get in God's way. He won't be hindered in giving you grace because of all the tchotchke stuff out there in the sales shops. So if you go with your desire to receive whatever God may give you, that's what's necessary. And I've been recently to Fatima, and I mean, it's beautiful and extremely meaningful, that's for sure. I don't know where exactly you intend to go, but that's one place that's well worth going to.
Yeah.
Have you made a pilgrimage to the Holy Land before, Chuck?
No, I haven't made any pilgrimages. Like I say, I'm going through this, trying to revitalize myself with the church and with my marriage and everything. And it's, like I say, it's sort of bucket list.
Yeah, I get it. I totally get it. And I completely support what you're doing, Chuck. And I'll pray for you in a special way. Here's another thing to consider. There's a beautiful shrine in Champion, Wisconsin, which is just outside of Green Bay, about, I don't know, half an hour outside of Green Bay, Wisconsin. And it's a place where Our Lady appeared to a young girl named Adele Breese. And she was told by Our Lady to teach the children how to say their prayers and how to you know, be good Catholics. And this is an amazing place because there was a fire that coincided with the Great Fire of Chicago. This is known as the Peshtigo Fire. You may have heard about it. And this is the site of the apparition, this farmland outside of Green Bay. The shrine itself is called Our Lady of Good Help. Well, what happened was this huge fire that just devoured, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands, if not millions of acres, whatever it was just a huge swath of area that was devoured by this inferno. And a lot of people were killed, countless animals, everything in its path was burned down. And there were people who were fleeing this fire, and they went to this place, this little plot of farmland, and they were miraculously saved from the fire. The fire burned right up to the edge of this little six-acre place where they were all gathered, and it stopped. And then it came from the other direction, and it stopped. It burned right up to this little place, and everybody who was there was saved miraculously. And that shrine, Our Lady of Good Success, is there for, or of Good Help, rather, is there for pilgrimages. So maybe before you go to one of the ones overseas, you might want to make a road trip to Wisconsin and bring all of the baggage that you're carrying there and let Our Lady help you.
I will. And again, the blessings of the day. I listen to you all the time, and it helps.
I'm so glad to hear that. I really am, Chuck. Well, you have my prayers, that's for sure. And I'm happy that God is moving in your life this way. Thanks, Chuck. I'm going to take a break, but I'm coming right back right after this. The Relevant Radio studio line is sponsored by the Catholic Order of Foresters Flexible Premium Life Insurance. For less than $12 a month, a 40-year-old can get $500,000 of coverage. Go to relevantradio.com/forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Okay, back to the phones. Let's go to Norwalk, California, to Pablo. Hi, Pablo. Welcome.
Hey, how's it going, Patrick?
Doing well, thanks. My mom and dad were from Norwalk, California. That's where they met as teenagers, and they got married at St. Pius X Church just down the street from you. Isn't that amazing?
That's nice. Yes, I heard it the other day. You were saying that I go to St. John of God.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, my question was this. I heard a previous caller, she was married to somebody from another religion, which is my case. Okay. My wife is Seventh-day Adventist, so we weren't married at any church. We just got married in the court.
Okay.
And I heard you talking about the convalidation.
Right.
So my question is this. If we go get blessed by the church, will we be committing sin if we have marital relationships after the blessing?
Well, okay, so from what you just described, your marriage is considered invalid because you didn't get married in the church. And I probably don't need to explain that again because you heard it earlier today, right?
Right.
So that being the case, because your marriage is objectively not valid, you don't have the right to live as married people do doing that. So
okay.
I realize that this is, you know, it's complicated and you're now married and you have been married for a while. So the thing to do is live as brother and sister. And in the meantime, you go to confession, bring all this up and everything else that may have happened since your last good confession, whatever it is, get right with God. Then you can start receiving Holy Communion. But in the meantime, I would also be working with your wife so that ideally that she would become Catholic. But even if she's not able or not ready or not willing to become Catholic, at the very least, you can have your marriage, as they say, blessed. Convalidation is one form of that. There are a few different ways that this could take place, but that's one of them. And it's a very simple, easy thing to do where you formally, publicly renew your marriage consent. And the priest...
Okay.
You know, the colloquial way that people talk about it is that you get your marriage blessed. But the point is, if you do that, then you no longer have to live as brother and sister because now you have a valid marriage and now you have a right to enjoy that benefit of marriage. So all will be well.
So after getting blessed, everything's okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, once your marriage is this is where the term convalidation comes from. It's referring to a marriage that was invalid becoming valid. And if your wife is baptized, now there's some serious problems.
She is baptized Catholic. She didn't do any other like confirmation or communion, but her parents before converting into Seventh-day Adventist, they were Catholic and they did baptize her Catholic.
Okay, so she's originally Catholic. That's good. Did she receive her first Holy Communion, and was she confirmed
as a
child?
No, all she did was a baptism.
Okay. So she could return to the Catholic faith. That would be ideal if she did.
Yes.
Okay, in which case, then, and even before that, for that matter, because she's baptized, your marriage would not only be valid, but it would also be sacramental, which is a great thing. So that's my advice. Go in that direction.
Alrighty, could I sneak one more question in because I'm
afraid not, only because I've got so many people holding. But call me in a couple days, Pablo. We'll do it that way, and I'll take that question then. Thank you. We'll go to Mike now in Plymouth, Minnesota. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Patrick. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure thing.
I'm going through a bit of a class studying the Catechism. We're on confirmation at this point, studying through that. And I've actually got, if possible, two questions about it. But first, regarding Catechism 1310, it says you must be in a state of grace. I was confirmed as an adult. I was advised to go to confession before confirmation, but I never did. So I definitely wasn't in a state of grace before my confirmation.
Okay.
I was wondering if you had thoughts.
Okay. Yeah. So what this amounts to is that if you were in the state of mortal sin, when you were confirmed, the confirmation is valid but not spiritually beneficial to you. But as soon as you regain the state of being in the state of grace again, then automatically the sacrament of confession has its spiritual effects in your life. So the graces and all the effects of the sacrament begin as soon as you get back in the state of grace.
Okay, awesome. Can I try the second one with you?
Well, I told the other guy no. If your question has to do with this question, then yes, if it's part of the same question. But if we're going in a different direction, then I'll have to press on.
Well, it's confirmation. I'll try it and you can say if you want. So 1304, where it says, like baptism, which it completes. Mm-hmm. Those three words regarding confirmation are kind of vexing me, thinking that is baptism not complete?
No, it's not like that. Baptism has a function unique to itself, and that is it serves as the foundation for all the other sacraments, without which you can't receive a sacrament, because it can have no effect on the soul if the soul is not regenerated and in the state of grace. So baptism could be understood, if you want to use an analogy, like a foundation for a building. You can't build the first, second, third, fourth story unless there's a foundation. So when it talks about confirmation completing baptism, it means that in that sense, that now further things that are important and necessary can be present that couldn't be without baptism. So it means completion in that sense, the way you would be completing, if you're building your house and it's a two-story house, well, you can complete it by adding the first and second story. But you couldn't do that if you didn't have the foundation there in the first place. That's what it's referring to. And again, by way of analogy. Thank you. I appreciate the call. Let's go to Nicholas now in Wrentham, Massachusetts. Good morning, Nicholas.
Good morning, Mr. Madrid. I have a couple questions.
Okay.
How did Cain be able to reproduce? And if so, how did he get another wife? Or, like, how did he get a wife?
Right.
And did God send his wife down?
Well, God didn't send a wife down in the sense like a miracle or something. So when we read in Genesis that Cain killed his brother Abel, we're not told, time-wise exactly how long after Adam and Eve had been kicked out of the Garden of Eden. But we can say that it was definitely long enough for them to have had many children. And it says in Genesis, Genesis chapter 5, that they had many other children. So this is what happened, is that many children had by then been born. And so some of them, well, all of them in the beginning were intermarrying. So the brothers and sisters intermarried, and then they would then marry between cousins. And then as more and more people came into existence, they didn't have to marry close relatives. So Cain was either marrying, when he went into banishment, he either married one of his sisters or one of his cousins or nieces, but he married from among the women who were already there. In the way it reads in Genesis, it almost seems as though Adam and Eve get kicked out of the garden, and then there's just Cain and Abel. It mentions Seth shortly after that. So it gives the impression that there were no other people, just Cain and Abel. But in fact, there were plenty of other people by that time. It just doesn't mention them. You see?
Okay. Yep. Thank you so much.
Good question. You're welcome. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
So you're 12. I'm guessing, are you seventh grade?
Fifth
grade. Is that right?
Sixth
grade. Okay.
I'm in sixth grade. Yep.
That's great. A Catholic school, homeschool, public school?
Catholic school.
Right on.
Catholic school. Yep.
Good for you. Well, I'm happy that you're thinking these deep thoughts, and I'm glad you called today. Thank you, Nicholas. Let's go to Mark now in Eureka, waiting patiently. Hello, Mark.
Oh, good morning, Patrick. Sorry, but listen, you've answered my question, or you touched on it so many ways this morning. Can I ask an ancillary question that I've developed while listening?
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, the differences between forgiveness, absolution, and atonement. I have my ideas, but if you could just touch on.
Okay, so forgiveness, absolution, and atonement. So forgiveness, if we're talking about God's forgiveness, when you go to God directly in your heart and repent of your sins and ask him to forgive you, he does forgive you in a way just like Jesus healed the leper in Mark chapter 1. The leper said, Lord, I know that if you want me to be healed, you can heal me. And Jesus says, I do want it. Be healed. And then and there, the man was healed. So the analogy of leprosy being the sin and you being the leper. So when you go to God in your heart and ask for forgiveness, he does indeed forgive you. Now, in a way parallel to how Jesus dealt with the leper, Jesus then says, now go into the city and show yourself to the priest and then perform the sacrifice prescribed by the law of Moses. And the reason for that was that due to the nature of this illness, the men and women who had contracted it had to live apart from society. So they couldn't live in their families and work their jobs and be among other people. So by going to the priest would verify, yes, this guy has been healed. He can come back into daily life. And in the same kind of way, when you go to confession, Jesus established this sacrament by giving the apostles the authority to forgive sins. It's God forgiving the sins, but he's given this ministry to the apostles. You can read about that in John 20. Begin reading in verse 20. He breathes on them and says, receive the Holy Spirit. He who sins you forgive or forgiven them. He who sins you hold bound or held bound. So they now have this special authority from Jesus to forgive sins in God's name. And so that's the part where we get from forgiveness now to absolution. Absolution is where you are formally absolved by the priest. Really, it's by Jesus through the ministry of the priest. And that has a really helpful effect for you and me as human beings, because you can know without a doubt that you have been forgiven. The sacrament of confession is it makes it official, if you want to put it that way. Because, you know, as human beings, we have the tendency to wonder, was I really forgiven? Was I really sorry? Did God really hear my prayer? How do I know I'm forgiven? Well, when you go to confession, the absolution makes it clear. Now, you mentioned forgiveness and absolution. Oh, the other one was atonement. Okay. Atonement, strictly speaking, is what Jesus accomplished for you and for all sinners on the cross by atoning with his suffering and death for the penalty that you and I couldn't pay for ourselves. We can't pay that penalty due to sin, because if we could, there'd be no need for Jesus to come and die on the cross. So he accomplishes this restitution, if we can substitute that word. He performs restitution by giving himself as our sacrifice and taking that punishment upon himself. That's what the atonement is referring to. Now, in a secondary sense, you can atone for your sins in the sense of you can perform restitution. So if you stole money by atoning for that sin, you're not atoning for the penalty due to sin. Only Jesus can do that. But you could restore the money that you stole. You could also participate in that sense. Does that help, Mark?
Well, I understand the cross as well as a man can, I guess. But what about, I thought purgatory was an atonement for other sins that we personally did? Or
well, yeah, purgatory is not atonement in that sense. Purgatory is, as Paul describes it in 1 Corinthians 3, beginning in verse 10, it's the manner in which God purifies you of those works in your life that are incompatible with God. Now, this is only for people who die in the state of grace. They're on their way to heaven, but they need to be purified along the way. That's what purgatory is all about. But only Jesus can atone for the penalty due to our sins. We can't do that. In purgatory, we're dealing with the effects of our sins, and those get purged away. I hope that's helpful, Mark. I know you waited a long time, so thank you for your patience. And my apologies to everybody else who's been waiting. You know how it is. The show goes by so fast. But I look forward to being with you again tomorrow. Same Pat time, same Pat channel. So please give me a call. We'll do it again tomorrow, God willing. And the creek don't rise. And between now and then, I'll pray for you. Please pray for me. God bless you.